Speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to the debate about legalizing drugs. You can hear this program at 96.5 FM in the Sacramento area, or you could go to accesssacramento.org, or you can download it from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Yeah, but But the point that Asa made, that if kids see that their parents are smoking dope,
or drinking, here.
All right, fine, but make it drinking. You don't think that there's a lesson?
No, actually, what I would suggest is that when you see your parents and other adults using a drug responsibly, and we need to keep coming back to this point, drug use does not equal drug abuse. Those are two very separate things, and we can deal with them. But when you see your parents having a glass of wine with dinner and acting responsibly around an intoxicant, you learn a very strong lesson there that is going to be much more beneficial to you than if you grow up in a teetotaler house and then you have the unfortunate experience of going to Yale and Harvard.
So if
like Paul here.
Ma'am, right up against the wall.
Hi, Diana Jimenez. I come from Mexico, and in the past 6 years, we've had 60,000 people dead in drug-related violence. My question is, legalizing drugs would do better for cartel violence or worse?
I want to go to Paul Butler, since that used to be your job, to a degree.
Sure.
And
if we listen to the leaders of the Latin American countries, they're calling for more responsible drug policies, including for us to consider legalization, because they know that the violence is sparked by the illegal market, which is sparked by the enormous demand for drugs from the United States. So if we get rid of that illegal market, including by having drugs regulated like we regulate tobacco and alcohol now, we'll get rid of the violence.
Oh, well, to that point, the answer is absolutely no. Do you think the legalization of drugs will put the cartel out of business? It might make them adjust, but there's alien smuggling, which they're engaged in now. There's other activities. I met with President Vicente Fox whenever he was president. He was concerned not only about the cartels. He was concerned about the growing demand problem and usage in Mexico of his people. And that was a concern there. And so it's not just about the cartel. It's about drug usage. I don't know of any Latin American country that wants to legalize all the drugs, heroin, cocaine down the road.
And Mike, we'll come to you.
My sister married a Dutch guy, and their wedding was in Amsterdam about 7 or 8 years ago. And none of the Dutch people at the wedding could care less about pot. So it's been available to them their whole lives, and it seems to have taken some of the thrill away from it. Do you think that would hold true here?
Would pot stop being cool?
Yeah, you take some of the coolness. So, if your parents are smoking pot, does that
take... I'm going to take the question first to Asa Hutchinson. Would it take the thrill away and the attraction away?
It becomes very common, but let's look more carefully. And I've been to the Netherlands, and I've been to the coffee houses, and...
drank coffee.
You got to invent... You got to investigate carefully. But the Dutch government's had second thoughts after years of expanding the cannabis cafes. I think they realized they became a tourist mecca for that purpose and what you just described. And so the number of Dutch marijuana coffee houses dropped from almost 1,200 in 1997 to 782. 73% of the Dutch towns do not allow cannabis cafes. And so I think it was a mistake, the path that they went down. They recognize that they've retreated from that, both in terms of their reputation and the commercial enterprise, but also I just think it's a direction that the Dutch towns did not want to go down.
All right, let's let Paul Butler come in.
And so there are fewer coffee houses because there's less of a demand. It turned out in Amsterdam, when they made smoking pot legal, fewer kids wanted to do it. So respectfully, Dr. Theodore and Asa, if you really want kids to stop smoking pot, you should go on TV yourselves and fire up a big juicy blunt.
We have we're being live streamed, and we have a question that's come into us from Washington State via Facebook. Tom Glassman, he asks, is the legalization of a drug, for example, marijuana, something that should be left to the states to decide? Nick Gillespie.
This is a fascinating political question that the Obama administration in particular is going to have to deal with, because traditionally the Democrats, or at least over the past 30 or 40 years, assert the primacy of federal law over every matter, no matter what, whether it's funding or regulations or whatnot. I guess it's a second best answer to say that drug legalization should be left to localities or to states, as opposed to a one-size-fits-all federal solution. Let the states and localities be laboratories of democracy and see what happens to the experiments.
I think we have time for one more question. Ma'am.
Hi, my name is Tatiana Martyshev. I'm in the healthcare profession. And I mostly deal with pain management. And I have a lot of clients who are getting treatment for cancer. And they actually tell me that their doctors say to them, listen, the best thing for you is actually just go buy some pot. Because it's actually much more effective in managing the pain. It's cheaper than the drugs. Why not give them something that is readily available to them if they just walk down the street and pay someone?
Okay, take the side arguing against legalization, well, Asa Hutchinson.
I mean, anytime a doctor or the American Medical Society says a patient needs something for pain management, I'll be the first one to sign up for it. Doctors in the medical profession should determine what's appropriate pain management and care. At this point, the AMA has not approved that. And so that's the answer. I don't think that relates to the overall debate question, but it's certainly an appropriate question to ask.
You just said that you don't feel that question relates to the motion, and you've said that a few times on a few questions. Why not?
Well, I mean, medical marijuana is a separate and distinct issue. Some states put medical marijuana on the ballot, which takes a doctor's prescription or authorization. And so that's not a legalization issue. It is a physician issue and pain management and doctor's care.
And that concludes round two of this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. Here's where we are. We are about to hear brief closing statements from each debater in turn. And this is their last chance to try to change your minds. Remember, you voted before the debate, and you will be asked to vote again right after these closing statements. The team that has changed the most minds will be declared our winner. Our motion is legalize drugs. And here to summarize his position against the motion, Asa Hutchinson, former administrator of the Drug Enforcement Administration.
Today, as I prepared for this debate, I received a call from a family friend in Arkansas who is a grown mother, actually has two 30-year-old girls. And she said both of them are on methamphetamine, and she simply asked, what do I do about it? And of course, I started thinking through, how does legalization impact this very real tragedy that is destroying this home and this family, and one of the 30-year-old daughters have children? And I could not think of a system of legalization that would make this better. Because this person that has a problem will never get the treatment necessary to get over that addiction unless they're confronted with it, and probably from a legal standpoint. It is that officer that will say, ma'am, you've got methamphetamine in your car, you need to get help, we're going to arrest you, or you're going to go to drug court, something's going to happen, and that will change their life. And this could be multiplied over and over again. Ladies and gentlemen, this is about legalizing drugs. If you send a signal to our youth of our nation, the next generation, as President Barack Obama wants to do, that it is illegal, then usage will stay at a modest level, hopefully a declining level. If you legalize it, usage will go up. If you believe it is harmful, then you should vote no on the proposition. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Asa Hutchinson. Our motion is legalize drugs, and here to make his closing statement in support of the motion, Paul Butler, Georgetown law professor and former federal prosecutor.
Thanks first to my great partner and my very worthy opponents. It sounds, though, like I was wrong about how Asa would respond to someone who he cares about who has a drug problem, because it does sound like he thinks the best thing to do is to call the police. I just fundamentally disagree with that. I don't think that in order to get treated for a drug problem, you should have to admit that you're a criminal. I agree with President Obama when he said during the first campaign that it's blind and counterproductive to lock up nonviolent drug offenders. If it worked, if it got drugs off the street, then maybe I'd support it. But we know that it just doesn't work. The determination of who goes to criminal court in chains should not be so fortuitous. It should not depend so much on the color of your skin or how much money your parents make. As long as it does, we need to legalize drugs.
Thank you, Paul Butler. And that is our motion, legalize drugs. And here to make his closing statement against the motion, Theodore Dalrymple. He is a former prison doctor and the Dietrich Weissmann Fellow at the Manhattan Institute.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, first let me just remind you that Amsterdam is by far the most violent city in Western Europe, with a murder rate between two and a half and three times higher than that of Paris, for example. To give you an idea of the utopianism that is behind this motion, let me tell you that the head of the drug agency of the United Nations once said that the drugs trade was corrupting West Africa. Now, if you can believe that, you can believe anything. Because when I arrived in Lagos Airport, the first time I arrived in Lagos Airport, the customs officer said, "Have you brought any presents?" I said, "I don't know anybody in Nigeria." He said, "For me." And I soon got the general view. Crime is not caused by the illegality of drugs, nor is their illegality the cause of the problems to which they give rise. But remember that genies do not go back into the bottles when they are commanded to do so. So please vote against the motion, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Theodore Darrenfeld. Our motion is legalize drugs. And here to make his closing statement in support of the motion, Nick Gillespie, editor-in-chief of Reason.com and Reason TV.
The status quo in the drug war is untenable and destructive for all of the reasons that my partner outlined. There is no way around it. The drug war has always been prosecuted along racial lines, along class lines, and other discriminatory practices. That's not going to change. It's not going to get better in the second 100 years of drug prohibition. More to the point, I want you to think about, as you think about legalizing drugs, recognize, is use the same as abuse? Because that's the underlying premise of the anti-legalization movement. To say, marijuana use might go up, so what? If it's not bad, if it's no different than taking a beer, if it's not qualitatively different than having a beer or a martini, maybe that's not such a bad thing. In the end, the legalization movement is a movement for personal responsibility where we criminalize bad behavior but not arbitrary substances. So please, legalize drugs.
Thank you, Nick Gillespie.
Legalize more drugs.
And that concludes our closing statements. And now it is time to learn which side you feel has argued the best. Our motion is legalize drugs. So remember, we've asked you to vote twice where you stand on this motion before you hear the arguments and afterwards. And the team that has changed its results by the largest percentage will be declared our winner. So here was the motion. Legalize drugs. Before the debate, 45% agreed with the motion, 23% were against, and 32% were undecided. After the debate, let's go first to the team arguing for the motion. Their second vote was 58%, 45% to 58%. That is a move of 13%. That's what needs to be beaten. The team against the motion, their first vote was 23%. The second vote was 30%. They've only gone up 7%. It is not enough. The debate goes to the other side, our winners. The team's arguing in favor of the motion, legalize drugs. Our congratulations to them.
Ladies and gentlemen, every presidential campaign needs at least one candidate from Massachusetts trying to hide his liberal past. So please welcome Republican candidate for president in 2012, Mitt Romney.
I'm so handsome, am I not? I could host a TV game. It's my photograph you got when you bought that picture frame. I backed healthcare in the past, but to win a White House fight, gotta change positions fast. Help me fake it to the right. If religion is your thing, go to Broadway now and find that they love the Book of Mormon. So I think this year is mine. I need 10 million votes, they say, to be my party's nominee. I'll get them all the Mormon way. When every Osmond votes for me.
Thank you. 1839, the place was New York State. In the Hudson River Valley on the Rensselaer Estate, a sheriff seeking rent pay was warned what he might find. And there were tin horns blowing from the hillside. Well, the shrieking of the horns meant the sheriff wasn't sure, but he was met with opposition that was stronger than before. As farmers dressed in calico came pouring out the woods, the tenants then assembled and stopped him where he stood. He presented them with writs demanding back rent pay. They seized the writs and burned them and sent him on his way. For so long they had suffered, but now they organized, and there were tin horns blowing from the hillside. Now this was not the first time the tensions rose like this. Back in 1750 and again in 66, they fought against patroonship, against the landlord's rule. And this time they were ready for a battle. Mass meetings of the tenants led to organized dissent. That same December they came again collecting rent. What the sheriff and his posse of 500 didn't know was there were 2,400 in calico. They were armed with clubs and pitchforks, assembled and arranged. They sent the sheriff and his soldiers back the way they came. They said the revolution was once again alive, and there were tin horns blowing from the hillside. Landlord owned the stores, the timber, all the houses too. Put yourself in the picture and think what you would do. He taxed you for your labor and he taxed you for your land. Every farmer in the valley was a servant. He was free to ride his horse and drink his wine and gather wealth. So far from the misery he'd never know himself. Over 80,000 people were impoverished by his greed, while he was filling his life up with luxury. Calico was chosen as the costume for the plan, paying tribute to the natives who'd been driven from this land. They agreed to take their power back, assembled by the cry of tin horns blowing from the hillside. In county after county, the movement spread and grew, till over 10,000 were prepared to see it through. They tarred and feathered deputies and burned the landlord's writs, direct action against the culprits. By 1845, it was clear it wouldn't last. They introduced petitions, but of course they didn't pass. After a farmer killed a deputy, the troops were ordered in. Nearly 100 tenants were imprisoned. They tried a few with murder, sentenced two more to be hanged. Forced two to write letters urging others to disband. It wasn't long before the politicians slithered in, reduced the sentences to life in prison. The next governor elected pardoned those still locked away. Passed some laws and made some speeches, but kept things much the same. They maintained domination of the many by the few, though some aspects were abolished and the owner class grew. Crushed them with their weapons and they crushed them with their law. But if you listen closely, you can hear the tin horns call. They can build the strongest shackles, but one day they will crack. And as history repeats, people learn from the past. Yes, there's a warning in this story for the tyrants of today. From Philly to Chiapas to Immokalee, when the water starts to boil, then the pot will overflow. It won't be long before you hear the tin horns blow.
between factory walls. I was conceived among the ivory halls, and in this world I knew my role. I went to work with a single goal. I traveled the earth to far off lands, from the Asian jungles to the African sands. I flew in planes of camouflage green before I settled upon this sea. Like a shooting star, I came to rest, and this farmer's field is where I nest, watching the seasons come and go, watching the long grass grow and grow. My purpose is clear for me to fulfill. The sun was out, it was the middle of May, when the farmer's three children came out to play. They ventured near, I lay in wait. One unknowing step sealed their fate. 1,000 shards of plastic rose from where I lay and through their clothes. Into their bodies the shrapnel sank. Here in this field by a river bank, the blood poured down, shone in the sun, and one cluster bomblet's job was done.
And now, messages from Access Sacramento.